Welcome, everybody, to Swords of Reason right here on the Speakeasy Show. This is where the logic meets passion, all right? If you're new here, the format's very simple. Each debater gets 10 minutes for opening statements, followed by a five-minute uninterrupted rebuttal. Then we open the floor for a full hour of back and forth before wrapping it up with a five-minute closing statement from each side. After that, we'll spend 30 minutes answering your questions from the chat. You'll have a live Q&A there in the chat. You can put your questions in, but Super Chats will get priority, and there's only 30-minute section for this. Once the formal debate is done, this is an optional for both debaters. They don't have to stay for this part. We open the doors for an open panel where anyone can hop in to challenge or question any of the things they hear tonight. So today's debate prompt is evolution based more on assumption than on direct evidence? And let's meet our debaters of today. For the affirmative, we have Chris Lestrange, has a channel right here on YouTube where he focuses on art, hot topic discussion, debates, and gaming. And for the negative, we have Planet Peterson, who also has a channel here on YouTube where he debates people and makes entertaining educational content. He's also an author with a book called Facts That Aren't True, with lots of fun information from debunking old wives' tales to exposing media-fueled misconceptions. So debaters, you know the rules. Let's keep it sharp. Chris, since you are affirmative, you're going to go first. So whenever you're ready, Chris, you can go ahead, and I'll start the timer up with your voice, and thank you both for being here tonight.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you to my opponent, Planet Peterson, or Uncle Eric over here. Speak, thanks for having us. So today's debate is about the direct evidence for evolution versus if it's assumptions or guesstimates. Because we are dealing with science, that would probably be empirical evidence. Evidence of a theory of Evo, even though, I mean, I feel it's more a hypothesis at this point from just looking at the stuff. It would probably require claims to go through the scientific method as it is a theory in science. So we'll probably delve into a little bit of that. The claims of the proposed theory tonight will be, my opponent will probably be giving evidence for that. So we'll run through that and see, give it a bit of a litmus test and see what's what. It's probably going to be a story about things that are attributed to a theory, but are just kind of normal observations about things that don't really tie into the theory, from what I've seen. And then, what else do we have here? Also, the discussion is probably going to go into the most likely, which is probably genetics, that will also conclude things that are similar, but then giving a distinction to similarities that equates to the same origin, which we'll probably go through as well. And I mean, that claim doesn't prove that either. So it's probably going to also appeal to, this is the one problem that I also realized, is biased institutions. Most of them are monopolizing their data, the verification of science. A lot of it starts a little bit rocky, which I don't know. I mean, in fields of science where, I don't know if we should be gatekeeping should be at a level that it is. I mean, if the ultimate purpose of science is to gain higher resolution pictures or understanding of nature and life, there seems to be weird that there's a lot of bias going on in these fields, which is very interesting for me. And I'm not going to do a delayed one. Let's jump into Peterson's and let's get it cracking.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Chris. And with that, we're going to hand the mic over to Planet Peterson. And whenever you're ready, go ahead and start. And I'll start the clock up with your voice.
Yeah, sounds good. I guess I'm ready. It caught me a little off guard because I was expecting a few more minutes. But that's cool. I actually like the idea of getting right into the open discussion. So I wrote down what you said. I was thinking about addressing it for my opening, but I think we'll just use the open dialogue portion for that because we get an hour. So is evolution predicated more on assumption or evidence? This is a little bit of a weird, it's kind of a weird topic because I mean, I could concede a lot of it potentially, but not be, and I don't think that's necessarily a problem. I think that's just kind of the nature of how science works. I don't know how to quantify this, how much of any scientific idea is based on evidence or assumptions. There, the science is a never-ending quest, and we will never, ever, ever, ever come anywhere close to having even 1% of all of the knowledge that we need. But for some scientific ideas, like a scientific theory or a law or whatever, I think it's fair to say, have we reached a threshold where it meets anybody's, any reasonable person's criteria for being demonstrated to be true beyond any kind of reasonable doubt or something like that? I would establish that a good scientific theory should meet that. And it's my belief that evolution has done this. I'm currently reading a book on the history of evolution and how it was developed. Impossible Monsters is the name of the book. It's really good. It starts with before Darwin. It goes all the way back, I think, into the Greeks, who had ideas about the history of life on Earth and how it changed, and how people before Darwin came up with ideas about evolution that ended up being partially true, but lots of those things were false. Goes over the history of how fossils and geology basically inspired and shaped the initial ideas that Darwin came up with. And then it goes over Darwin's publication, the backlash he got, the praise he got for it, and sort of the big cultural questions about how society dealt with that, either accepting it or rejecting it. It's pretty interesting. But I think that, so I'm not telling this story just to waste time. I think it's actually a critical and important part of this. Evolution is a very old idea. The modern sense of Darwinian evolution is over 150 years old, if I can do my math right. Yeah, it's getting close to 170 years old at this point. And it has been tested countless times. I wouldn't know what it would even be. It's millions of times certain aspects of the idea of evolution have been tested. And all scientific ideas are tested based on assumptions that we make. That's part of the topic for the debate here. But evolution has passed that test countless times. There have been things that ended up not being true, but they're not part of the current model of science. Science, like, we get things wrong in science all the time. That's the only way to know whether or not you have the correct ideas, and the correct ideas are what go into that body of knowledge, at least, hopefully, you would think. So, yes, there are many assumptions in scientific theory, but those assumptions were predicated on all kinds of observations that are made in the present. Starts with, like, animal domestication and the geographic distribution of species. And then the fossil record was a huge thing because people were just absolutely aghast at the idea that the fossil record is made almost entirely of these monstrous creatures that nobody's ever seen before. How can that possibly be? And the logical entailment, the logical conclusion that I think science got us to was, well, at one point, deep in Earth's history, the species that were around were not the same as today. But where do species come from? They come from reproduction. So that means that the species of today are the descendants of different species from the past. Ergo, evolution happens. And there are all kinds of much more high resolution, because that's a very overarching description, there are much more high resolution descriptions for how that happened. Chris brought up genetics. I'm happy to talk about that when we get into the open discussion here. That's really the main one, but other things like embryology, comparative anatomy, and all that. And
again, those are all tried and tested concepts and ideas within evolution. It's been tested, as I've said before, countless times. I didn't write an opening statement beforehand, so I may be repeating myself a little bit here. But yes, evolution has a 100 in the sort of modern concept of evolution, which is Darwinian, has a almost 170 year history of being tested over and over and over and over again. And I think it's passed that test with flying colors. So I am more than happy to get into that tonight. I think that'll probably do it for my opening statement.
All righty. Thank you for that, Planet Peterson. And with that, we're going to bring it over to the 5-minute uninterrupted rebuttals. Just a quick reminder for the chat. If you guys want to give a question in the Q&A, the Q&A is there in the chat, and there'll be a 30-minute Q&A at the end, and Super Chats will get priority. So if you want to make sure it gets answered, drop it in a Super Chat, because there's only 30 minutes. Let me get the 5-minute timer up for you, and we'll hand the mic back over to Chris. And whenever you're ready, Chris, for your 5-minute uninterrupted rebuttal, I'll start it up with your voice.
All right, cool. All right, so for me, a lot of the claims that are the core principle of evolution, right, would speak about the origin of life, and then it. I don't know if the opponent's going to do a pivot on that, but I can relay it if the pivot happens. But it would talk about the origin of life, and then populations coming from a common ancestor, right? This would be the start of it. So we would have to first, I would like to go from the start and see how all of this pans out from the start of this theory all the way through. So we would the first question you would have to ask, it's similar to a vehicle. If we don't have the core foundation, which would be the chassis in which we attach everything to, I'd first like to discuss that chassis, that all of the assumptions of evolution have to be tied into the core of its premise, right? Which would be the origin of life and how life was created to give us populations, because the discussion is about populations. So a lot of times with these discussions, the population gets granted. I'd like to first figure out how do we get there. And obviously the precursor to that would be how do we even get a singular before we get a population. So that is something I would like to focus on. And then, I mean, we can take it from there if it's reasonable or it makes sense. If there can be displays of evidence for what's proposed, which would be the assumptions and not a lot of evidence. And then with most of the claims that it makes, that it says, well, we have evidence for these things or just observable things that don't really, again, relate to the theory. It's there's struggle in an environment, things breed and make babies, and the genetics are inherited with the babies. And it's okay, but that says nothing about the claim of singular ancestor, everything coming from one ancestor, and even how we got life. That says nothing about what the theory is saying it explains, but then all of its evidence is just showing mundane things or models that it doesn't even tie into the theory. So I would say we probably have to start at the start and then figure out how do we move forward from there.
All right, and that's it for your rebuttal, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Awesome. Thank you for that. And we'll hand it back over to Planet Peterson for your 5-minute uninterrupted rebuttal.
Thanks. And I'm going to directly respond to Chris's rebuttal there. So I wrote down everything you said just kind of in bullet points. So the very first thing was a core principle of evolution. Is that it speaks on the origin of life. Evolution actually doesn't do that. Evolution is not a theory about where life originates. It's a theory that only explains life. Abiogenesis is a theory that describes life from non-life, which isn't biological evolution. There are different kind, like we can use the word evolution in different senses, because I could argue that erosion is a kind of evolution. It's just the evolution of the geosphere of the Earth. I could argue that there's such a thing as cosmic evolution. Stars create heavier elements, and so the universe literally changes in composition because that happens. But neither of those things is biological evolution. Now, Chris also talked about common ancestry in there, which is totally fair, and we'll get to that in a second here. But Chris then went on to make the claim that a big problem for evolution is this abiogenesis thing, because, as he said it, if we don't have the core chassis, then everything collapses above it. If we don't understand the origin of life, then there can be no evolution because it rests on this foundation. To me, this is actually completely irrelevant, because even if tonight we're not debating an alternative idea to evolution, so we don't have to spend very much time. We don't have to spend very much time on that here. But even if Chris or somebody says that evolution isn't true, the alternative is that God creates life or on this planet or whatever, it actually wouldn't matter. For the origin of life, God could have been the originator of life, and biological evolution would still be true. So the abiogenesis question doesn't prove or disprove anything about biological evolution. The other thing is that this abiogenesis thing, like if I can't give an account for exactly how life started, then again, that collapses evolutionary biology as well. No, and so for the reasons I just stated, I don't think that's the case. But the idea of life arising organically on this planet, completely naturalistically, that actually is a testable idea. It does make predictions, and evolution has passed that test as well. It would predict that if life has a common origin, and life is produced through reproduction, and there is a hereditary molecule, then all life on the planet would be related. And that is exactly the case. There isn't a single life form on this planet that doesn't share at least some genetic material, some genes. Not just the fact that we all have DNA, but specifically there are genes that bacteria have that even humans have. Very, very few of them, but there are some. So that's I wouldn't say it proves it in the same sense as prove is a loaded term. It doesn't prove it deductively, but it is scientific evidence. So it scientifically proves it in the weaker sort of case. I'm running out of time. The last thing was Chris said something about grant that populations exist. Oh, yeah. A supposed problem that we have with evolution is, well, the evolutionists, they just ask us to grant that we already have a population of organisms, and then evolution happens. Why should we grant that? And I kind of already made this point, but the response is, even if all life was magically created like 1,000 years ago, or whatever the alternative is, evolution still happens. It's absolutely undeniable. Now, there's a disagreement. I don't know Chris's official position. If Chris thinks some evolution happens, but the idea that birds actually did evolve from dinosaurs, well, evolution can't do that. There are limitations to evolution, perhaps. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe Chris thinks nothing has ever evolved. I don't think, no matter what you believe in, I don't think that that's possibly tenable. And that's my time, so we can get into it, I guess.
All right. Thank you for that. And just a reminder for the chat, I have put both debaters' channels in the description. If you don't see it, it's because it happened after the live already started. So just hit refresh. You'll see it there. So make sure you guys go subscribe to both debaters, because they both come in and giving you guys a show tonight. And with this, we're going to move into the hour of open floor. So you guys can, you know, cross-examine each other. And let me bring the timer up. And one more reminder, too, sorry, for the chat. Again, if you want to get your questions in, the live Q&A is up already. There'll be a 30-minute section at the end for this, and super chats will get priority. So if you want to make sure you get your question answered, send it through super chat to make sure you're at the top. With that being said, whoever wants to open up here with the open floor, I will start the timer with your voices. And again, thank you both for being here tonight.
Cool. So can I respond, Eric? Yeah. So why I brought this up, right? So, I mean, I have it here. It says the theory of evolution explains that populations or organisms change over time through a process called natural selection, right? So, I mean, a bacteria is an organism, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we would have to start at a basic form of life if we say, well, it's a theory of how through natural selection we have a diversification of species on this planet, right? So, I mean, that is still life and as a single-celled organism. So it does apply if we ask the question, if it's deducing the end result of life or how life got to this point, how would the starting point of this not be relevant towards the conversation?
Because if you believe that all life on the planet was, if you believe that no species has ever evolved from a different species, this one's a little bit goofy, but even if you do, kind of start over, I'm sorry. Even if you believe that the vast majority or virtually all species that exist were created, then evolution still happens over time. Even people that run like Answers in Genesis and the Institute of Creation Research, they all believe in evolution. For example, they think that there were only a few thousand species on the ark. Well, there are over 1.5 million species today. So they have to believe that evolution to an extent occurs. They just don't agree that it occurs to the extent that somebody like myself would say it does.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I mean, for this, I mean, you're an educator. I'm here to be educated. So I'm here with some questions, and then let's see if you can convince me. But I mean, with regards to that, right? If we speak about something coming from something, we have to look at the fundamental state of where things come from. Like this is why I said you guys grant yourself populations, because we would have to deduce firstly how living organisms existed. That's why abiogenesis exists, right? Because it's trying to answer this question of the origin of life, which is kind of important if we're talking about life. That's I mean, it should be relevant towards this discussion. And I think why you don't want to talk about it is because there's not a lot of evidence for it. It's mostly assumptions. So yeah, it's why I said you're going to grant yourself the populations, and then we're going to work from populations. And whether you're going to call everything evolution, it's become a synonymous term through everything. Technology evolves, like you said. Fucking erosion is evolution. Everything's evolution. Everything's evolution. We're talking about biological evolution now. So I don't care about the term being used synonymously. We all understand things change over time. The question is where life started changing and spread into variations.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know what to say without repeating myself. I guess I'd have to ask you the question. Even if life was created by like a god or something, then evolution would still happen, or would still, it would certainly still be possible. And it would also be, well, yeah, I guess I'll just ask you that question. Even if life is created by a god or whatever, evolution is still completely possible, right?
No. If it was created by a god, it would have been intelligently designed to adapt and have plasticity within its genetics to adapt to environments, which is just an adaptation to its environmental conditions.
Well, but
it
that
would
is
not
ev-
say
that, is
that all life came from a randomness of life itself over time. Then you just said it came from God, so then it would come from God, right?
The origin of life is not what evolution is, though. I guess I need to know what your definition of evolution is, so that we're not just talking past each other.
Evolution is one clade of animals that would turn into another clade of animals over time. With enough generations.
Well, no, that would literally break the law of phylogeny. But I mean, species change over time. No, you can't evolve out of your clade. Talk to a evolution nerd; they'll tell you that. This is why. I don't know if you've ever heard this claim before, but when we say birds are dinosaurs, humans are fish, that's because of the law of monophyly. You cannot evolve out of your clade.
Okay, so but that seems like a contradiction. So are we humans or fish then, by that logic?
Cladistically, yes, because we're on the same branch in the tree of life through evolution. We're connected to them. So you will all you're always part of your stem. So yes, we
okay,
are.
Okay, so because
go ahead.
Yeah, okay, so because of the cladistic structure that is set up for how we distinguish between these things. Just going to violate the law of identity then. That's just, so we're just going to set it up already with a contradiction then.
No, because if we're part of the same clade, then we share that identity. That's how we are also fish, because we're part of a clade called fish.
So our identity is fish, but also human.
Well, yeah, I mean, you would agree that a fish is, well, let's do a different one. Like a kangaroo is a mammal, right?
I mean that's what you guys say. I don't know. I'm stupid.
Do you think a dog is a mammal?
I mean, probably according to the structures that we're following for this discussion, I guess yes. That's what's proposed.
So a dog is a mammal. It's also a vertebrate. That's not a contradiction. You're describing. That animal taxonomically in two completely different brackets, one that's extremely broad, one that's narrow. So I'm an American. I'm also a Californian. I live in California. California is part of America. So we're not violating anything when we say a human is also part of a larger taxonomic group.
No, but saying I'm human and I'm a man and I'm white and I'm South African, that all fits into the same thing. But saying fish and human, these are two different distinct categories.
No, because we evolved.
You understand that
we evolved from a lineage that includes fish. You'd have to look at a cladogram to see that. But if you're connected to the same line, then you are that. Like, I could technically find out through genetic testing, so could you. One of us could find out if we're related to the Queen of England from like 300 years ago. So we could technically say we are of the lineage of the monarchy of England. That's completely possible. Now you live in South Africa, is that what you said?
Yes.
Cool. And I live in America. So it's like, okay, well, the aristocracy of England, they live in England. You live in South Africa, I live in California, so that's not possible. No, it is, because we're related to them. We're descendants of them. And that's what's going on with these things where we say, like, humans are fish, in a sense.
Yeah, but you're not saying they're descendants of the thing, right? So there's no distinction between when the thing stops being the thing and is not the other thing. It's just going everything is everything. So then we would have to deduce through that. This is why I said, can we start from the start? Because then we're going, okay, well, are we this? Are we then? Now we're fish. Now we're banana. Are we single cell organisms? So if we just do what's the broadest arching clade that we're going to go with? Just single cell organism, the start of it all, or what are we going to go with?
A living organism would be the most broad possible one.
Yeah, but I mean, but that's not giving a category of organism, right? So what is the
category of thing? And then what you would do is you'd figure out, okay, why do we put things into groups? We put things into groups because they have characteristics in common. There are characteristics that all life on this planet has in common. And I think that that's extremely strong supporting evidence of evolution.
Okay, well, but that's the thing. Okay, so then let's quickly just run through this. So sure. Evolution does not talk about how life existed from inorganic to organic. It doesn't speak about that. So you don't really want to talk about that.
Well, because it's not the topic of the debate. I mean, I'd be okay with spending like 5 minutes or something on it. There are people that do research on this. I've only read one book about it. Most of it went over my head. But origin of life research and all that kind of stuff, it is studied, but it would have some similarities with natural selection. But it's a different process.
Yeah, see, what's interesting for me is my background's in composite materials and more along the lines of chemistry. So this is what's interesting for me, because this is how, you know, the building blocks of things are quite important to how we get things. You see, that's just logic, right? So it's why I feel it's a relevant thing to discuss, because I get why you don't want to address abiogenesis, because from what I've seen, there's just nothing. It's just all assumptions of things that nothing can really be proven. Well, what does it prove then?
Well, I mean, there was a really famous, like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, debate between Dave Farina and what the hell is that guy's name? Wow, I totally blanked on his name. But this is bugging me. James Tour. They had this huge debate about what do we know about origin of life research? And there are all these chemical precursors and chemical processes and pathways that Tour asserts if we don't have this, then we can't answer how life appeared. And Dave Farina showed up with all kinds of scientific papers that demonstrate we have shown elements of this process that gets life going demonstrated in labs before. There we have autocatalytic cycles. That's kind of the main one, because you have to build something that is self-sustaining, which a cell in effect is.
But to get to cell, you understand that there's many steps before we get to cell.
The only thing
that I've seen is in a controlled lab experiment with varying chemicals within a jar, shocking the shit out of it with electricity, you're able to get amino acids.
The Miller.
Everything. That's what it's all based on. Everything after that is just assumption.
There's thousands of papers about origin of life research. I'm not a trained chemist. I don't focus on this topic. So there's not a ton I can tell you off the top of my head, but I mean, you could go watch that video and you can see that, there are scientific papers written about this. We are like so far beyond, Miller-Urey at this point. There are all kinds of, like, we've discovered, the Krebs cycle exists in nature. And so there's this, pretty popular idea about the origin of life. There's multiple competing hypotheses. A good one that I really like is metabolism first, because we tend to have this idea that, well, you have genes that code for metabolism, so therefore you have to have the genes first. It's like, well, actually, if you have a metabolic reaction that can build things, then you can have the metabolism first, which is able to build cellular precursor materials, and then the first cell is essentially created out of metabolism. And we've been able to find analogs to that, not just in the lab, but in nature. The Krebs cycle, for example, it's an autocatalytic cycle based on that. We can find it, and we can see it doing interesting things like building up new molecules, catalyzing itself, yeah, that, which means to speed it up.
No, well, that does nothing, right? You would require an energy source. No, well, you jump to metabolism, right? So what is metabolizing before we get the cell, right? So see how you did that jump there. Metabolization requires an energy source, right, for it to metabolize.
Yeah, hydrothermal vents. That's where they find them.
No, well, that's not what causes the metabolism. Before that, even before we even get to the cell, we need to figure out a way in which we first get the DNA and then the RNA that can extract the DNA to even create from the aminos to create the protein before we can get anything with regarding metabolic function or any of that, bro.
Yeah, nucleic acids can be found in nature. All of them.
Yeah, nucleic acids can, but yeah. I mean that's just, but yeah, so
you don't need a cell to make DNA. DNA exists, not like complex DNA, but nucleic acids exist in nature completely separate from cells. Same with amino acids.
Yeah, but they don't contain the genetic code, right?
Well, no. If it's not alive, then it wouldn't have a genetic code.
Yeah, so where do we get the code then to start the process?
Well, again, there's RNA world hypothesis. There's metabolism first
RNA
hypothesis.
RNA world hypothesis is not
virus
stable.
First. There are multiple competing hypotheses. There are people doing extraordinary work in this. Again,
yes, hypotheses, cool assumptions.
Yeah, well, that's how you do science. Yeah, I mean, 1,000 years ago, we couldn't explain gravity.
We still can't explain gravity properly. What do you mean? What causes gravity?
The massive objects changing the warping.
No, mass
the
attracts
space-time.
Mass. Okay. Well, yeah, that's also a hypothesis. We still don't. We don't know. No, it's not. Confirmed? The warping of space-time.
Yeah, Arthur Eddington and some other researchers in South America, they took pictures of stars that were behind the sun during a solar eclipse. So the light literally bent around the sun. And new telescopes...
What does that prove, dude?
The warping of space-time. That's literally what that is. That was the very first
how do you
time
prove that it,
general relativity
how does the
was
picture...
ever confirmed. But we get gravitational lensing images from telescopes all the time. Google gravitational lensing, and you see these funhouse mirror images of very distant galaxies, the light of which is stretched and warped by the extremely massive objects in space. That's been known for so long.
Composite images by a biased observer or evaluating it. That's the proof.
I mean, if you're going to say there is no evidence, and then I tell you the evidence, and then you just say the evidence is fake, then I just take that as a concession. But this definitely has nothing to do with evolution.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. But for sure. But again, the precursor is because a lot of people don't understand this because you guys grant yourself a lot, but don't explain the intermediary parts of this, like what I was saying with the cell construction, where we get DNA from, and the whole RNA theory. RNA is super fragile, dude. And there's no way that the DNA gets out of the nuclei, so that's what the RNA is for. But now going with the RNAs first, which with RNA world, that's a hypothesis that has a lot of holes in it because RNA is not very stable or in any ways something that would survive in the conditions that's presupposed on early Earth. DNA is way more viable because it's protected. So that whole thing is shaky on its face.
I mean, sure. I've already said this, but there are scientists. I mean, you literally said you have not really looked into this. There are thousands of papers that have been written on origin of life research. I'm not a chemist. I don't study that. I can't tell you very much about it. But I can tell you that this is being worked on by scientists. If you go to the National Institutes of Health and just type in origin of life, I got 45,888 results by typing that in. People are working on this, but anyways,
the quantity is not, it's saying there's a quantity of papers regarding it does not display that it proves anything that you're trying to prove.
It demonstrates that there is scientific work being done on the subject. But again,
but scientific work on something is not proof of something. Do you understand that? The display of something that's you understand the scientific method, dude. We need experiments to prove these things that are repeatable. That is what science is. Just saying people write papers about... Dude, students can write papers about things and post it up. What does that have to do with anything being proved?
Not in the National Institutes of Health, they can't, no.
Okay, so they're not students. People write things. Good. AI also writes things. Who cares? I don't care how many papers are out there. What I'm asking for is if I look into it and see what they're actually saying it proves... That's what we're talking about today. If we're just going to say, well, there's a lot of assumptions, you're just proving my point with this debate, which is not good.
Again, if people are writing scientific papers, they're not just writing down what they assume. They're taking the scientific models, which are predicated on assumptions, and they're showing you the research that backs up whatever the claim is. So it's not just assumptions. It's all kinds of work. What do you need to personally see in order to be convinced that evolution is likely to be true? Account for the origin of life.
We did
15 minutes on that topic at this point.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you, but that's a thing. I thought we would be able to cover this with some kind of explanation, because the thing is, we need a base population, right, for evolution to even occur. Okay, right? And then even if we look at like what's proposed is LUCA, right? The universal common ancestor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even according to science, that's not the first instance of life. So
it would be the most recent one we're all related to. Yeah, it wouldn't be the first.
The most recent one we're related to. Wouldn't that be our parents?
No, the most recent thing that every living thing is related to. Because you and I have parents, but we're not.
That doesn't make sense. The most recent thing we're all related to.
Yeah.
What does the recency mean in that? The most recent.
So you and I.
That doesn't make sense what you're saying.
I know. You and I both have parents, but your parents are not my common ancestor. We'd have to go back. Hundreds of years to find somebody that you and I are both related to. And once we find out the most recent one, that's the last universal common ancestor between you and me.
But it's not, because there was life before Luca.
Yeah, but it's...
So do you see how last, that doesn't make sense?
Yeah, but it's last, not first. Last universal common ancestor.
Oh, I mean, dude. All right. I'm just gonna leave that there. If that's what we're dealing with. All right. So now the variation of species. Now again, we're sitting with a population. Now, so we're just gonna grant the population, because that's what always happens with these. It never wants to get touched on in the discussion, because for evolution to occur, you need a population of species to reproduce.
Sorry, was that a question?
No, well, I'm asking, right? We need a population that needs to reproduce for things to change from there, right?
Yep.
Okay.
So
that's why populations are in question. You understand that?
Yeah. But we can test, like you can assume that God made all the populations of organisms on Earth a billion years ago, a million years ago, 1,000 years ago, you can still test if evolution happens. We're just going to disagree about to the extent which it happens.
No, like, but if God created it, then evolution didn't happen. The species he created adapted. Evolution. No. But no, we're past abiogenesis. You now said God created it, so that would refute abiogenesis.
Yeah.
So why are you bringing that up?
Because it sounded like you were disagreeing with me because of abiogenesis. So, like, do you...
No, I'm saying if God created everything, that's completely not analogous to the claims of evolution, dude.
I kind of disagree. I mean, people that believe in evolution pretty much universally think that life had its own organic, naturalistic genesis on this planet. But even if God created the first, I could believe, this is how this would work. I could believe that life is billions of years old, like I already do. I could believe that every living thing on this planet is the product of evolution, like I already do. But then I could simultaneously believe, well, yeah, but God created the first single-celled organism in the Earth's oceans billions of years ago, and then evolution has just progressed since then. So that is me believing that God created life, but also believing in evolution.
Okay, so if God, if the theory of evolution speaks about natural selection, mm-hmm. if it's intelligently created, then it would be not evolution. So that's a contradiction.
No, because the origin of life is not evolution, is not biological evolution.
Okay, so you're saying then, okay, so I'm going to try to be charitable. So you're saying God would have then intelligently added this mechanism that you're claiming is evolution.
Yeah, I'm just saying if God created life, that doesn't falsify evolution. Because you can believe in both, and I just laid out a pathway for how you can. Or you can believe in a less extreme version of both. Like I told you, the young Earth creationists, they think Noah's flood really happened. I don't. They think there are only a few thousand species on the ark, but all the animals and plants and whatever, well, it was only animals on the ark, I guess, but the millions of species we have today obviously came from the ark, so a few thousand species turned into millions of species. So that is absolutely evolution.
Well, if you could prove that all species are coming from just a random common ancestor that emerged, then I guess that would be evolution. But if God created it, he designed it internally with mechanisms that would create the very
What makes you say that though?
If something intelligent made something, right?
Yeah.
If something intelligent made something that has these mechanisms to do things, right? An intelligent design, then these mechanisms would have been built in, that then it would not be natural selection like natural selection that's causing it. It would be its design that's causing it to do these things, right? Natural selection proposes that there's a problem with that as well, with random mutation, that now because of rapid mutation, these things are changing.
So I can kind of grant you in theory the idea that if God created life, then God created life with the chemical machinery that living organisms have. True, but it doesn't describe anything more specific than that. Why would God make it so that all life on this planet uses the same ones, DNA? That actually, it doesn't predict that at all. If no life is actually related, if we're all just created, then mm-hmm. there shouldn't, the way we test for if things are related is we look at genetics, and the fact that our mm-hmm. the fact that the genetics is totally predictable and consistent with evolutionary trees that were drawn up long before we even knew DNA existed makes zero sense theistically.
Well, dude, why would God not
make every single form of life biochemically unique?
why would that be necessary? I don't understand this, right? So if I'm creating things, even as an artist, artists have a set medium in which they create.
Because the problem is your claim isn't
testable. No, what I'm telling you is if somebody's creating in a medium, now you're saying they should be multi-medium creating something for that to be some kind of justification for God doing something, because why would he use the same material to make something?
Yeah, like writing. So you're just saying
he should have done it way more complexly than it already exists with all of the variations of life.
I'm telling you that the idea that God did it makes no predictions. It doesn't tell you if it should look like this or that. But like, as an example, writing was independently developed by all kinds of cultures throughout the world, but it's completely different in every one of them, even the ones where they, you know, used, like, scribbled it onto paper, parchment, papyrus, whatever, they used completely different symbols. In South America, the Inca, they recorded information by tying quipus, which are just these big things where they tie knots in them. They figured out a way to encode language by tying knots on strings. That is so radically different than cuneiform, for example. So I'm getting there. If God created all life, then that does not at all predict that life would all be biochemically the same fundamentally. But that is what we have. Share the same DNA. It would be the equivalent of the people in South America also using, also developing cuneiform exactly the same as the Babylonians did. That would be such a coincidence that you have to assume that that's actually because it's from the exact same source. But when it's different, then that's then it doesn't follow to assume that.
No, it doesn't. So the thing is, firstly, that's a category error, massive category error. Claiming things that humans do to God, that's massive category error, firstly. So that, I'm not even going to grant that. That's silly. But with human beings doing variations on things, that's got nothing to do with that. Now that categoristic? Sorry, English is my second language. That categoristic would not directly translate to how God would make things, right? That's a category error. But I would just say the precursor for all life, because all life comes from the same thing, as then carbon. So I mean, wow, why is it all made out of carbon?
That makes sense evolutionarily. You can claim that it makes
because we
sense.
Don't even need genetics, right? We can just say, well, everything's carbon, so it's got to come from the same place because everything's carbon.
Well, I mean, DNA is carbon-based.
Now I'm a volcano, because that also has carbon in it.
Well, no, because the characteristics of volcanoes and organisms are distinguishable, and you definitely fit the category of an organism.
I'm metal, bro, because I contain carbon. You see how the problem is? Because we're all made of the same thing, we come from the same source, huh?
That's what evolution would predict. If there's a last universal common ancestor, if all life on the planet is the result of evolution from a first life form, then all life on the planet ought to share genes. And we do share genes with everything on the planet. And the degree to which you share it matches taxonomy extremely well. And that was all hypothesized before we could test that scientifically, and then it passed the scientific test with flying colors.
Do you know what the problem is with saying because we all share similar construction in most of our DNA, that necessitates that we all come from the same source? There's a bit of a problem with that, because that would underlie that the fundamental mechanisms of life and nature is cannibalism. Because anything we eat would be a precursor to ourselves. We all come from the same thing, right? So if I eat anything, it's just cannibalization. That's what the structure of the world runs on then.
That doesn't logically prove or disprove anything.
That's the problem with what you're saying.
You said it.
So it's everything. Yeah. But you saying it because everything comes from a similar source, right? So then the mechanism on which life functions is cannibalism, basically.
Whether or not organisms engage in some form of cannibalism is not what evolution is hinged on to be true or false.
Yeah, the what's interesting about this is also why I brought up the gatekeeping of this kind of thing is if you look into the look into the origins of this, right? From Margaret Singer to all of the precursors that came, everybody, Darwin's cousin, everybody, what are we talking about? Eugenics, Planned Parenthood, just overpopulation, the first eugenicists. All of this stuff comes from a singular source, right? So we end up with this degeneracy Yeah, no, 100%, dude, because this is the conclusion of all of this.
Well, eugenics is... no, first of all, absolutely not. Eugenics is very much anti-evolution because it's literally false. And it's a completely asinine interpretation of what evolution means. I looked into, so I gotta call out Speakeasy here. You're wrong. I've written two books. My first book was Rational Answers to Stupid Questions, and I tackle this eugenics thing in there. So like I'm happy to talk about that if you want to. But
okay, but you know Darwin influenced Thomas Malthus, the overpopulationist.
Thomas Malthus was writing in the 1700s.
Yes, he influenced Darwin. Darwin, yes, correct. Yeah. And then his half cousin, the
Francis
eugenics
Galton,
dude.
He was a eugenicist, but Francis Galton didn't even believe in evolution, as far as like, well, that might be wrong. I don't remember exactly, but
what I'm saying is if we talk about things coming from one thing, it seems that there's a very good trend of subversion coming from this small group of people. That's led to massive degeneracy and ultimately this kind of conclusion that you guys are proposing with evolution, that if we're all just animals, I want to ask you something. If we're all animals and we are part of the great ape family, right, dude? Then if a gorilla could consent, would it be fine banging a gorilla?
I don't think so. This has nothing to do with the topic of the debate, though.
But we are all great apes, right? And consent is usually the problem with liberals. So they can sign language. So what if they sign language? I would like to bust the nut right now.
A child is more intelligent than probably any gorilla. And the intelligence and the power dynamic that we understand is the age thing as well. Although that's not really relevant for a gorilla. But the intelligence level and the ability to consent and the power dynamic that informs us that adult-child relationships are completely inappropriate would absolutely apply to some form of animal as well, because they don't understand consent. The power dynamic that is going on between us and them is also a factor, and they're also kind of stupid. But going back to your thing about Darwin.
So, but what if we tested the intelligence then? What if the intelligence had a bar that was high enough? They were of age.
What if God told you to fuck a gorilla? Then, if God is the source of morality, then it would be okay. See, this
you know
has
why
nothing
I brought
to
this
do with
up?
The debate. No, I have no idea.
No.
Yeah,
okay.
it's kind of getting off topic. We're going into morality here.
It's fine. We can bring it back. But it's what's interesting about this and why I brought up the institutions is because it seems you guys go, well, we're just doing these assumptions of things. It's harmless. We're just doing the science. But the conclusions of these things become very, very weird with what they relate to. And then the opposing opinions with these things seem to get rejected by these institutions. And the institutions is where we get our information from. So when we're doing a discussion about evidence, assessing the institutions is quite important where we're gathering our evidence from, right?
Yeah. So in your opening statement, you kind of talked about like the gatekeeping of information. So the reason I wanted to bring up my book was not really to plug the book, but just to make the point that when I wrote this, There's 140, you're probably not going to be able to see it, but there's 145 citations in the, oh God, my camera just turned off. Why did it do that?
It's okay. It happens to me too, dude.
I didn't even do anything. And it, oh no. What the heck? Let me, why is it doing that? I can fidget with the settings here.
Yeah, we can pause the time for a sec if you need to fix that. There you go.
There we go. Okay. So there's 100 and now the it's totally washed out here too. So I have all those citations in here. The vast majority of those well, not necessarily the majority, but by far the plurality of the for the source for the citations was NIH, the National Institutes of Health, or the which is for like biological research, especially that's a huge one. So I was able to read many dozens, maybe even close to 100 papers that are totally public access. So the information is not gatekept. There are certain things like academic journals; they are paywalled, but that's because they have to make some money on it, so you have to have a subscription to get access to some of the some
yes,
of those.
And then peer review, right? To have access.
Yeah. Sorry, say that again.
Like access to peer review, right? That would be another thing, right? So you would have to get accredited people to peer review your things, and then you would ask me, "Hey, Chris, peer review my stuff," and then I say, "Well, fuck off, Peterson. I'm not gonna do that." So how does that? I mean, do you see how there are problems in these institutions with how they function?
I mean, you're sort of making, I think you're making the argument of they don't accept outside ideas or something like that. But if the ideas that they do accept are false, then what would be guaranteed by that is then the corpus, the body of the scientific evidence would contradict itself. If it's false, it can't all be true. It would necessarily all be contradictory, but it just isn't. Like anybody can check that and see that the geology, the paleontology, the genetics, the embryology, all of that stuff is mutually reinforcing.
Yeah, I mean, but those things are crucial for discovery of a lot of things in science, right? So life, mechanisms, diseases, all of these things, right? But what's interesting is, and this is why I brought this up, is those claims and that research gets tied to evolution, but the actual claims of evolution can't be run through the scientific method, but it's acclaimed as science.
So that's just like
which that
false.
That seems like a contradiction on its face, that something is granted the status of a theory, but it doesn't follow the scientific principles. So therein I already see a clear problem with the institutions, because this is taught in schools, right?
Yeah. If evolution is true, it makes tons of predictable results that are scientifically confirmable.
If it's true.
Yeah, that's how all science is predicated on starting there. If blank, I'm making a very grandiose statement here that maybe isn't necessarily true, but if blank, then blank. If claim is true, then this is the predictable evidence. And that's how science is done. Now, like experiments are great, and we do evolutionary experiments all the time, but it doesn't have to run through like a controlled experiment to be science. But furthermore, biological evolution, as we understand it today, is natural selection. So if it occurred in a lab, then that would be artificial selection. So you actually wouldn't want to run it through like a lab or whatever, but that doesn't mean that you're skirting the scientific method.
But again, it's kind of like the whole clay discussion, right? That we are human and we are fish. It seems that the experiments of other things get attributed to, oh yeah, no, but that's a evolution experiment. But it's actually not tied to it. It's just something that they go, yeah, but that's an explanation for that. So we're just going to attribute it to that. But the claims of the theory itself, there's no experiments for that that seem to be repeatable, like you just said. It would kind of defeat its purpose if it was done in a lab, right? Because now we have intelligent design features affecting it.
I mean, I already went over this. If evolution is true, the implication for that is that all life on the planet is the product of the first life form on our planet. That's testable. All life on the planet should share genes. And so we've collected the DNA of countless organisms. And first of all, we all have DNA, which is remarkably strong supporting evidence. And the commonalities between those genes are exactly what you'd expect under evolution. That is absolutely scientific in every sense.
If I find two pencils in the forest, can I deduce, because they both contain lead and wood, that they come from the same place?
Not necessarily by that, but you could do an isotopic analysis to see, the carbon sourced in certain mines has a particular isotopic signature to it. Same story for wood. So, I mean, like you literally could prove it that way scientifically, which is to say you could find overwhelming evidence for it. Yeah.
Yes, you could prove it with an experiment, right? But we can't just make that claim.
I wouldn't say you prove it with an experiment. I mean, that we study.
Are we just going to observe the pencils to prove this?
Say that again.
Are we just going to observe the pencils to prove this? Or would we not use an experiment if we have an hypothesis?
This is such a weird example. I mean, because you're just giving me not much data. So you'd want to investigate the characteristics of those pencils, not necessarily just that they're made of wood and they have graphite in them or whatever. But no, for life, we know how to do that. There's a hereditary molecule. It's DNA. We all have it.
Yes, DNA is like the lead. So the assumption of a similar source is what's in question.
Well, yeah, but unlike pencils, organisms reproduce. We know that. And we know that they pass on a hereditary. That was completely up for debate, discussion. There's absolutely no reason why there should be any hereditary molecule. And there certainly is no reason, if evolution is false, there's absolutely no reason why all life would have the same hereditary molecule. But it does. So evolution could have been disproven if genetics had revealed contradictions like no life on the planet shares a hereditary molecule. That would have totally disproven evolution, but that's not what happened.
Well, but what's interesting about that seems to be, you kind of, I think you said it in one of your opening statements, is that with these things, what I also found weird is it seems like there's some species like the horseshoe crab, crocodile, some insects, the sulacath, a couple of varying species that seem to have just not undergone evolution in millions of years.
No, that's not true. I used to have this misconception too, but coelacanth is not a species. Coelacanth is a family of it. You can actually, the word is used in two different senses. It's a class and a family of fishes. So it's the equivalent of saying, it's approximately equivalent to saying, canine. Well, no, it's more broad than that. It would be the equivalent of saying carnivore.
No,
bears are no. Yes, taxonomically, it's the equivalent of that. Bears are carnivores. Seals are carnivores. Dogs and cats are carnivores. So when you say, "Oh, they say that cats evolved, but we find carnivores in the fossil record. But that'd be like bears, right? So coelacanth is not a species.
Peter Tim, the guy that saw that saw the coelacanth, was my diving instructor, bro. He's a South African. Yeah, I know what the coelacanths are, brother. I know what they are, dude. It's a fish, and the old coelacanths look like the new coelacanths. It's not a different fucking species, is it?
No, they're completely different. The ones in the fossil record are a totally different size. And they're actually so distinct.
A different size.
They're so distinct that the ones in the fossil record are actually, they're either part of a different class or family. I don't remember off the top of my head. So living coelacanths, like the scientific name for some of those, would be coelacanth. Wait, is this an extinct one? Coelacanth are, yeah. So like a living one today would be, let me actually get the proper name of this. For crying out loud. Sorry, sometimes this is really hard. It seems like it's Coelacanthus granulatus. Sorry. Whereas an extinct one, that would be, its species name is Axelrodichthys arapinensis. Arapinensis. Sorry, these Latin words are really hard to read. So they have completely different genuses. For the extinct ones, in a totally different genus.
So their phenotypical expressions
are
different.
They're not the same species at all. Taxonomically, they're in completely different groups.
No, I think it's just the same. The species seems to be the same. You're just talking about difference in phenotypical expressions.
No, they're literally classified taxonomically in as different genuses. They can't possibly be in the same species.
Yeah, dude, but your taxonomical thing is just, it says everything is a fish. So, I mean, that's just ridiculous. So I'm not going to go on that. So
I can explain this a little bit further. This is just a problem with the way it's talked about. Because I used to think this. I thought coelacanth was a species. It's not. It's a group of fishes. It's like saying turtle. Turtle isn't a species. You have to be way more specific than that because there are snapping turtles.
Yeah, but a turtle is still a turtle, dude.
Yeah, but if there are
turtle is still a turtle.
Yeah, but if the turtles in the fossil record are different than the ones of today, then that means that turtles have evolved.
It means that there's differences in phenotypical expressions of these things. It's the same thing I mentioned, crocodile, horse. There's a lot of these. We're focusing on the coelacanth, but there's multiple of these things that seem to not really have changed in their phenotypical expressions, their slight variations over millions of years. That's what you guys say.
Some of them look remarkably similar, but we don't have the DNA of any of them. So if you wanted to confirm that they actually are exactly the same and they don't just, I mean, fossils are so incredibly low resolution.
Because it's just the imprint. There's no organic material left, right?
Right. So that would be.
It's the same thing with dinosaurs. I mean, dude, you know science. Like, I have a fight with this because I used to make stuff for museums. You know that there's not dinosaur bones. You know that it's fossils. It's not bone. There's no bone left.
Well, yeah, yeah, we know that.
Yeah,
we study fossils, but it's just.
But there's no bones. There's no bones. Right. It's an imprint inside of stone where there used to be organic material.
It may be an imprint. It may be a cast. We have
like a cast.
Yeah, we have found some dinosaur parts trapped in amber. As far as I know, there's nothing organic that you can actually really get out of those. But
mm-mm. No, and I mean DNA is fragile with regard to that. It's I mean, it's going to degrade over time in any way, so it would kind of almost be pointless. But the thing is, right? So yeah, with regard to the whole thing, you brought up a good point there. The fossil records, most of that is looking at a low resolution imprint of something and then making conclusions, which, I mean, that's also not science. That's just making an observation. There's no experiment. There's nothing to really study. The organic material isn't there. So we're just looking kind of at a picture and deducing what we see, like when I look at the clouds and say, look, there's a cat in the clouds.
Well, I wouldn't say it's like that. But no, by looking at the fossils, I mean, like in Darwin's own lifetime, when he first published on the Origin of Species, he kind of lamented that we don't have that many fossils. And that there's a quote from him talking about that, that creationists use a lot. But like he lived for several decades after he published the book. And if you actually do the digging, he openly talks about many years later. I actually just read this in this book I talked about earlier. He openly celebrates how many amazing, wonderful, and beneficial to his theory new fossils have been discovered, because we just weren't doing hardly any paleontology in the mid-1800s, and then it got super popular. But anyways,
well, because there was money involved, right? I mean, dude, you understand also how this works, right? I want to get grants because I want to keep doing my research. That's my job, right? I want to keep my job. So I'm going to do what I can to keep my job because I need money to do my job from funding.
What's wrong with that?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. But you see how that creates an incentive. It creates an incentive to produce results.
There's nothing wrong with that either, unless you're committing fraud.
That would be a problem if you did do that, right?
Okay, I mean, I don't know if you want to go there and talk about Piltdown Man and some of the.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that was attributed as, you know, fossils and scientific things that were fraud. You know that, right?
Yes, and thankfully, scientists are the ones that discovered that, and the scientific process or whatever holds itself accountable. The only way we're gonna fix bad sciences with better science.
Yeah, I agree. I can agree with that statement. Yeah,
sure,
for sure. So, anyways, yeah, good science fixed that. Yeah.
So you brought up the, like, oh, we can't tell anything from the dinosaurs thing. Well, we can't get DNA from them. But anyway, I started telling that story about Darwin, and sorry, I know a lot, so I talk a lot about topics like this. But anyways, so Darwin predicted that birds evolved from dinosaurs, so there should be transitional forms. And then we found them, like Hesperornis and Archaeopteryx. Now you could claim, yeah, but maybe that's just a coincidence or whatever. It's like, well, okay. But then genetically, birds should be most closely related to the other archosaurs, which today the only archosaurs around still are the crocodilians. Pretty sure they're the only ones. So then later when we learned how to do genetics, we could do that. And lo and behold, birds are most closely related to crocodiles. Now, if I were going to believe in intelligent design or whatever, I would say things that fly are designed the same, so they should have the most in common at the fundamental genetic level. But that's absolutely not the case. Birds and bats have more in common genetically with a bat than a bird does, but but they both fly. So it's just overwhelmingly supportive of evolution and nothing else.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? That birds and bats don't have in common, but what's proposed is the fact that, yeah, birds are, what you're saying is birds are more similar to crocodiles than they are to bats. So
genetically, yeah.
Yeah, genetically. But again, like we said, that comes down to the whole question with the pencil, right? So they're made up of the same things that have similarities to them. But what's interesting about that is we don't really see variations on that. And if they're related, there's vastly different phenotypical expressions between the two species. So I don't understand how we bridge that without some kind of experiment or evidence that would actually prove that. Because saying, well, they have these genetic similarities does not prove that they come from each other, which is the claim of evolution, that these things came from the other thing.
But the genetics was predicted. You're saying oh, you're taking the genetics and then creating a theory surrounding genetics. No, evolution was a theory generated far before we knew anything about genetics. Evolution predicted genetics, the way we understand, or the particulars of genetics, and then it was tested, and the scientific data we have around genetics is confirmatory of evolution. It didn't happen the other way around. This is why, this is why I talked about in my opening. Evolution's a very old idea. Genetics is part of the line of evidences that were that evolution had to be tested against that it passed.
No, I understand this, but you understand that that's just post hoc, right? That you're saying we made a prediction,
but it's the exact opposite of post hoc.
With what? Well, it's what ad hoc. Sorry that I fucked that up.
Well, you know, I don't actually know what ad hoc means off the top of my head. I know what post hoc.
Well,
means.
But yeah, well,
ad hoc just means done for a purpose as necessary. But that's, I mean,
yeah, well, so here. We make a prediction, and then the experiments gets done that says, okay, well, our prediction was correct.
Yeah, that's not post hoc.
Okay, but the prediction is confirmed by somebody biased, but then even that prediction does still not say that it actually comes from the same thing. The prediction is that we think birds come from reptiles. Yeah, but does it prove that? That's the point. How does it prove that?
Well,
it proves similarities in genetics. How does it prove a common descent? That's the question.
Because the similarities in genetics is the prediction of common descent. It is uniquely the prediction of that. One came decades after the other.
Mm-hmm. So. How would you know one came after the other?
I'm not talking about like birds and reptiles. I'm talking about genetics versus the theory of evolution. The theory of evolution came before genetics, but it predicted genetics, the genetic data we see today.
All right. Okay. That's the end of the open hour there. So we're going to get into the 5-minute closing statements. First off, I want to say thank you to both of you again for showing up. This has been great and made my job easy. I didn't have to interrupt at all. You guys were respectful, so that's always the best debates. Everyone in the chat, reminder for you guys, you can find both debaters in the description. So make sure you go and subscribe to both of them. Okay, they came out and gave you guys a good show. They deserve the subscribe at least, okay? And I'm pretty sure Chris is streaming, so go over to his stream, send him some money. I don't know. Are you streaming right now?
Yeah. First time.
I know you are. I was asking Planet Peterson if he was.
No, I'm recording. I'll re-upload it.
Oh, okay.
Tomorrow or the next day.
Okay.
No worries. But yeah, everyone, go over there, send him some money too. Okay. Show some support for the debaters coming and giving you a show. And with that way we do it here, so Chris had the first opening statement, so he's going to go first here, and then that will give Planet Peterson the last word here. And chat, you guys can also get your questions in. We're going to have a 30-minute Q&A, and super chats will get priority. So if you want to make sure it gets asked, send it through a super chat. With that being said, Chris, whenever you want to start up your closing statement, I'll start the timer with your voice.
Thanks, man. It's for me, because of what I do, I work things back to front and kind of try to see the whole process in very granular forms, because this is how we kind of prevent issues from jumping up and you mitigate problems jumping up. When you go very granular with things and kind of look at all the intermediary steps from the start to the end, so reverse engineering or how I would process things. That's kind of what I wanted to do here, is take it through from the start, because unfortunately we didn't really get into it, but I mean, we kind of, I mean, I did a bit of waffling, so we didn't really get to everything that I wanted to. But most of the claims that get attributed to things, or research that gets done, it shows a result that then gets tied to the theory. It's not an experiment for the theory or for what it proposes. It is things that gets done. It gets proved successful. It gets added to the theory. And what's interesting is from the inception, from Darwin's side, that he proposed sexual selection. Sexual selection is not really a thing that gets talked about now. So what's interesting is from what I saw, even with hypotheses, when it gets disproven, you would have to make a new one. But it seems with this very interesting theory, things just get added on to. If things get disproven, it just gets shifted slightly. So it is almost a continuum fallacy of a theory that just keeps shifting the goalpost on what it says, what it has to prove. And experiments that get done get attributed to it, even though when you kind of ask, well, but how does that prove the thing that you're claiming? It just kind of asserts the thing that the experiment proved, but not the claim, which is very interesting. I could never understand why that happens. And yeah, I mean, I appreciate the debate. And yeah, I didn't get a lot of resolution on these things, but I do appreciate Planet Peterson's time. And thank you, Speakeasy, for organizing it for us, dude. I really do appreciate that.
All right. And that you didn't want to use the rest of your time there?
I mean, I'll just say, yeah, the issue with the institutions, it's a bigger problem, right? So what I really wanted to barrel down through that is, it seems that there's a, like, we can dispute these things, but the institutions and the structures for these things seem to have common trends that, like evolution says, branches out into all these other things. It seems that when we look at the institution itself or the origins of these interesting theories that seem to, I mean, I wouldn't say it's directly, I could never make the claim that it's directly tied to, but it seems to be things opposing to God or things that were proposed. So it seems that it has this trend of this branching tree from these institutions that's doing interesting subversive things. Kind of all of these weird nuanced ideas are coming from this branching tree of these institutions, which is very weird. And now it's infiltrated fully into universities and everything, even on lower levels, which is very interesting to me that happens. So even if we look at the family tree of a lot of these theories, it seems to branch from very similar origins, which it's interesting that's what the theory proposes. And then on the other end of the spectrum, with its societal implications, It seems to coalesce quite nicely, which is interesting. And with regards to why I question the theory, and with it being in the lower institutions like school and things like this, is, I mean, we still teach the Mercator map to kids in school, even though it's wrong. It's wrong. The sizes are wrong. All of this is wrong. It's not. It's we're teaching incorrect things to kids. So yeah. It's very easy to look that up, by the way. So we teach the Mercator map. Its projections of the continents are incorrect in sizing. It's just fine. We're just teaching something incorrect, but it's fine. So it seems that there's a common trend to teach things that are incorrect if by some biases they feel it's appropriate. So there is some kind of observation or consensus over, well, this is fine, that's not fine, but the core principle of science should be the scientific method and how that works, that there's actual testable, repeatable experiments that arise from hypotheses and questions that are asked. If these things are wrong, they need to be changed. That's it.
All right, thank you for that, Chris. And with that, we're going to hand it over to Planet Peterson for his closing statement. And whenever you're ready, I'll start the timer up with your voice.
I'll probably just say like two things here. I'll address what Chris just said there, which is, I think we already have the solution for what Chris was talking about, because we agreed that the only solution for wrong science is new and better science. So I'll just sort of leave it at that. The only thing I wanted to address this earlier, but it was a little bit tangential. And Chris brought up a little bit of this when he was doing his closing too. But it's the idea that like evolution is racist, that it supports eugenics, that the logical entailment of it is that, or the horrors committed by the Third Reich and something like that. That's just really not true. Like I said, I mentioned this earlier, but eugenics is just very easily falsifiable via evolution, because eugenics proposes the idea that you can rid your population of people who have like alcoholism or schizophrenia or various conditions like that by not letting them breed. But we know, and this is actually a little bit more of a genetics thing than an evolution thing, I suppose, but we now know genetically that's false. There's no such thing as a gene for schizophrenia or alcoholism or any of the other traits that society deemed not valuable. But furthermore, you don't need evolution to get a group in power to push for heinous things like that. I mean, banning interracial marriages or marriage outside of your religious group or outside of your ethnic group, that's a practice that's been going on for like literally, I was going to say hundreds of years, but like literally forever. I mean, in the time of Henry VIII, they made it illegal for Christians to be married to Jews, right? So that is absolutely like a kind of eugenics. You don't need evolution for that, but evolution and genetics and modern science is actually indispensable, because it's actually the only tool that allows us to say, hey, your idea is literally false, and we can prove that it's false. The only other thing with respect to this I wanted to say was Darwin was a racist person. He absolutely was. I would say probably everybody in the 1850s, for the most part, was. But at the same time, he was actually remarkably ahead of his time, kind of like Abraham Lincoln. Hilarious coincidence, Darwin and Abraham Lincoln were born on the exact same day, in the exact same year also, so they're birthday buddies. But anyways, the conventional thought of the time for people who kind of believed in evolution but not necessarily Darwinian evolution, and even people that were persuaded by some of Darwin's ideas, they were influenced by early Greek thinkers on the idea of a great chain of being, which means that there are hierarchies of living things. It's God, and then angels, and then humans, and then animals, and then lower animals. Unfortunately, because of that, huge numbers of people believed that there were different species of human beings. They thought that the Asians and the Europeans were at the top pinnacle, and they were literally a different species than, for example, Africans. Darwin was extremely ahead of his time for claiming no, two things. He claimed there is only one human species, which it's kind of hard to say exactly how powerful it is to send that message in the pushback against the just horrendous racism of the time. But also he proposed that humans originated out of Africa, which as far as we can tell scientifically, is confirmed today. So I would actually argue that Charles Darwin individually perhaps did more to combat racism than any single individual person who ever lived. And with that, that is my closing statement.
All right. Thank you for that. And again, thank you to both of the debaters. What we're going to get into now is the Q&A. And always right before we do the Q&A, I ask a question for each side, just to I like to give each side, it's kind of like give one last argument for each side. So for Chris's side first, what would be the like specific assumptions that scientists make when they reconstruct the evolutionary history? Like, what is the specific assumptions that you're saying they make?
Natural selection. It's interesting how that word gets used, natural selection, because by using the word natural selection, it encompasses genetic changes and then the environment as well, right? Kind of, you know, don't go granular, broad brush shit. So the claim would be that all species originate from one common ancestor and then diversified in all of the different clades and species that we now see around the world. And that claim of everything originating from the same source doesn't seem to be substantiated. It seems to substantiate that living things are made out of similar things and they're more similar to another thing. But that is telling us, giving us a look at similarities between things, and not actually saying, giving us proof of the origin of things from one species.
All right, and then Planet Peterson, did you have something you wanted to answer to that?
No.
Okay, and then for your Planet Peterson side, what's like the like best example of direct evidence that demonstrates the evolutionary change over time?
I have to think that it is genetics. It's kind of difficult to pick between genetics and the fossil record. Genetics is predicted by evolution. I said this multiple times. So, but I think that's actually kind of the strength and the fascinating thing about it, because it's not post hoc. It's we predicted that genetics would have the structure that it does, and it does. But the fossils are also so incredibly strong as well, because virtually the entirety of the fossil record is composed of organisms that don't exist anymore. But we know that organisms come about through reproduction. So the only logical entailment then is the different species of the past are our ancestors. Or let me say that a different way. The species of today are the descendants of the species of the past, which are different. And so the only logical entailment for that is that the species have changed over time. That's kind of hard to pick between the two of those. So, I don't know. They're like 1A and 1B.
All right. And then do you want to say anything to that, Chris?
Yeah, man. All I would say is that it comes down to the thing what I said about carbon, right? That we go, all living things or all animals are made out of meat. That doesn't really do anything towards the claim of them being coming from the same, completely different thing, that they are still that thing, but also something else, which that just doesn't make sense to me.
All right. Let's get into the question, the Q&A. Just let me get this correct timer up here.
Also, Peterson, if you ever do a call-in show, I'll come jump on if you ever want to like chat more or something. We can do that.
I stream on TikTok on the weekends.
Okay. I don't do TikTok.
Yeah, if you guys ever want to come back in the future and redo this, I'd be more than happy to.
Yeah.
Host it. So we got Frankie with a gifted membership 2 times. Thank you very much. We got $10 comes in from Tay Gooch. What a name. I love it, though. For the goal, not one step back. Thank you very much for the $10 super chat. $10 comes in from Made by Jim Bob. Peterson, Some people say the universe has always existed. Why not say life has always existed?
You could say that if you want, but the evidence just overwhelmingly demonstrates that that's not the case. So that's why I wouldn't say that.
And did you want to say anything to that, Chris?
I mean, yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, he laid it out quite well. Nah, well, I'll just leave it there. It's fine. Yeah.
All right. No problem. Then we got $5 comes in from Verna Desar. Is the law of monophily circular reasoning with using the assumption of common ancestry to prove common ancestry?
Let me read that again. Is the law of monophily circular reasoning with using the assumption of common ancestry to prove common ancestry? So the law of monophily is not something that is used to like test or confirm evolution. It's almost like an axiom, but it's something we arrived at through doing evolution in combination with genetics. I mean, like, that's actually interesting. We've been producing... I don't think you can really do modern phylogenetics. Well, yeah, it has genetics in the term. I was going to say, can you do it without genetics? Obviously, you can't. But no, I mean, we've been making cladistical evolutionary trees before we had sequenced genomes of organisms. But yeah, monophily is just something that's informed by the evolution. So it's not post hoc either.
All right. And did you want to say anything to that, Chris?
No. All righty. We can move through it.
And then we got $5 comes in from Daniel Zan. That mustache is so bad it single-handedly disproves evolution. No species trying to survive would grow that on purpose.
that's wild. I think it's cool.
Then it served its purpose, man, I guess. I guess then it
Daniel's
served its purpose.
Our neighborhood asshole.
Nice. Yeah.
Thank you, Daniel. We got $5 comes in from Cry Me a River. Planet Peterson, are we assuming that evolution over-engineered human intelligence? Are we assuming that certain traits reemerged several times but sapience once?
So I think that human beings are the most intelligent species that's probably ever existed. Although I would say that because I am a human, we're also the only species that deliberately engages in self-destruction. So it's like an outside observer would say that we're utterly stupid. So like, I don't know, but no, I mean, just because we have the most intelligence doesn't mean that intelligence hasn't evolved multiple times. Neanderthals were obviously extremely intelligent, just not as intelligent as us. Like take any of our cousins or common ancestors in our genus Homo or even Australopithecus. If we never existed, any one of them would have been the most intelligent thing that ever existed too. So like, it's not like we're unique, but we're not unique in the sense that we're the only organism that possesses intelligence. That's just so obviously not the case. Are we assuming that certain traits reemerged several times but sapiens once? Yeah, so that's just not the case at all. No.
All right. And did you want to say anything to that, Chris?
Yeah, it's interesting how that works. I've kind of had a discussion about, I kind of brought up de-evolution, but I think Peterson will probably agree that there is no such thing as de-evolution. It's just all evolution. So, yeah. Even if we became worse and like, you know, it's a good example of this is koalas. They fucking suck.
They just drug addicts.
They're just drug addicted bears, bro. Like that thing, you cannot tell me that is the pinnacle of what that damn drop bear should be. No way, dude. No way. I'll leave it there.
All right, fair enough. We got Wicked Wally comes in for $5. Ad hoc hypotheses, inserting hypotheticals into theories to prevent the theories from being falsified.
Ad hoc hypothesis, inserting hypotheticals into theories. I've never heard that term before. I understand it in the context of what ad hoc means. It's proposed out of necessity. I do not assert that evolutionary science does this. There's no argument presented that it does, but no, I mean, there's this claim that there are rescuing devices for certain scientific ideas. So I don't want to filibuster on it, but I just, no, that's not what's going on with biology, evolution.
All right. Do you want to say something to that, Chris?
That was a bit of a fail on my part. I mixed it up. Somebody mentioned that. It's like, I knew what it meant, okay? I just got confused. Shit. All right? I'm not a smart man, okay? I'm smart enough to know I'm regarded, okay? I'm just, you know what the correct word is to place in there. Yeah, the thing is, I mean, I understand. So the thing is, assumptions and theories are important, but it's a part of the scientific method that these things need to be falsifiable or have a way to falsify them for an establishment. And I do understand the problem that the evolution side has. It's a very difficult thing to try and put through the scientific method. That's why it doesn't exactly fit through what all of the other things do with regard to, like, chemistry is a very, I mean, shit, dude, that one's solid as it can be, right? I get the problem.
All right. All righty. We got Big Red Sky comes in for $2. Keep up the grind, my friend. Thank you, Big Red Sky, for that. Big appreciation for that. XQ comes in for $5. Humans are very genetically similar to bananas. Did a monkey grow roots or did a banana tree sprout legs?
I'm so sick of this claim because people that believe in evolution say this, and it's not true. I talk about it in my first book. I'll just give you guys the overview of this. People say we're 50% genetically the same as a banana. That is not the case. What happened was there was a study done, and they looked at the proteins that we share with bananas. On average, the proteins we share with bananas are 50% similar to ours. And that got misinterpreted as, oh, overall, genetically, we're 50% identical. Not the case at all. Us and bananas, like, we're like maybe 1%.
Yeah, what I would add there for Peterson is, I mean, what he's saying is in a way correct, because, yeah, I mean, dude, it's like with amino acids are the building blocks of proteins, right? In a way, and I mean, dude, there's 500 amino acids, and then there's only 200 that gets used for 22. Sorry, of the 500, there's 22 that's for proteins and stuff. So yeah, there's going to be similarities in the proteins that are used in these things. It's like meat's meat, right? All animals contain meat.
Alrighty. We got $5 from Verna Desire. Thank you both debaters tonight. I wonder if a debate between Made by Jim Bob and Kellogg Elasova, I hope I said that right, about evolution would be good. I mean, if they want to do that, They want to do it here. I'm down for it. But I seen them arguing back and forth. It probably would be good in the chat.
They're probably fighting in chat or something.
Yeah. We got $5 in from Tommy. Says, two of my favorite debaters and also the best moderator in the game. Let's go. Thank you, Tommy. Cheers. Shout out to you. Next, we got $5 made by Jim Bob. P1, evolution produces changes in organisms. P2, populations are changes in organisms. C, Evo produces populations. How does random mutation produce populations?
What the fuck? Evolution produces changes in organisms.
Sorry, I might be bad at reading.
No, you read it correctly. Populations are changes in organisms.
That's not what a population is. I don't understand. Conclusion, evolution produces populations. I don't know if that's even valid. I'm not going to take the time to deduce that right now. Well, people can rewatch this later. But so the question is, how does random mutation produce populations? It by itself doesn't. The theory is evolution by natural selection. There are multiple mechanisms for that. Like I could say, without the sun, we wouldn't have weather. Oh, so how does the sun create hurricanes? Well, you have to have oceans, and there have to be other things. I guess technically you'd only need, you need an atmosphere too. So you need three things for that to happen. So I'll, Chris, you can respond to that. I'm gonna type this in and see if it's actually valid.
Okay, so yeah, obviously that's kind of what I asked. Is the problem is that the start, like you kind of said there, the starting point of where you go, where you kind of wanted to say with the evolution, because it's interesting how abiogenesis does not get included in a discussion of life, a population producing all of the other populations we have. Because the start of it, it's presuming a start. Firstly, in its question, it's asking, it's presuming a start, but doesn't want to start from the start. But it claims that that it produces changes in organisms. Evolution is changes in organisms, but you need organisms for organisms to change. So that's kind of what Jim Bob was in a way stipulating there. So then, and then going random mutation produces populations, but you require populations to randomly mutate. It's a weird circular thing. I also don't really get how, like, you have to take it back to the start, dude. Otherwise, it's just like the circular thing of it produces itself. It produces itself. I also struggle with it.
So just like super quickly, it's valid in the sense that the way it's written is A causes B, and then premise two is C is those changes in B, and then conclusion A causes C. But premise two is just absolutely, so it's not sound, because premise two is a total category error. He's treated a noun, a population, as a process, which is the changes. That's why I was like, when I read premise two, I was like, what the hell? Populations are changes in organisms. So there we go.
Alrighty. And next, last super chat here, actually, we got $5 from Emmett. Says, as a chemist, would not be easier for me to say life-based complex structures are explained due to the properties and energy stability of carbon?
I mean,
yeah,
that would just be a necessary component of biochemistry. So it does. Mm-hmm. This isn't exclusionary or affirmative of evolution doesn't depend on whether or not this claim is true. So
yeah,
it's just kind of,
yeah, but see,
so what?
He's doing the thing of trying to take it back to its core foundations, right? Kind of similarity to what abiogenesis is doing. He's like I was saying with the clades, right? He's just trying to reduce it down to the highest or microscopic version of the clade that he can take it to.
I mean, sure, but when you, the problem is when you do that, you often end up in a place, at a place that doesn't describe anything. So, like, if I were going to take, we were talking about chemistry, atomic theory doesn't actually tell you why chemistry works the way it does. Not really. I mean, like, understanding valence electrons and energy levels does. But if I were to zoom in further and be like, oh, well, a hadron is actually just made of quarks which are bound together by gluons. It's like, okay, but that doesn't tell me anything about whether or not fluorine has a higher bond affinity than chlorine, which it does. So that's why I'm saying, if you keep digging down, eventually you stop, you end up in a place with information that isn't actually useful.
Alrighty. Next, so we have a little bit more time here, so we'll go over to the chat Q&A. First one we got here, Bricky on a rant says, is adaptation the same as evolution?
No, I get so annoyed with this one too. So, adaptation is like we talk about organisms having adaptations, but an adaptation is not a thing that an organism does. It's not really something that an organism, you can say it's something an organism possesses, but you're describing phenotypes. Phenotypes are, and adaptations are downstream of genetics. And so if you want to say that the adaptations from one organism are passed down to the other organism, therefore it's actually just adaptation, it's actually in the genes, right? And you can't have a change in an adaptation without changes in genes or gene expression happening first. Changes in genes or gene expression across time through populations is what evolution is. So it's not the adaptation that's doing anything.
Can I address something? Dude, that's definitely not true. What's very interesting is I've had discussions with guys that grow marijuana, funny enough, if we want to talk about adaptation. You know that a genetically similar seed from a mother plant can be placed at different elevations and it produces different differentials in phenotypical expressions, not looking at all like its counterpart. In that's not over a generation, the same generation, having completely different phenotypical expressions just because of elevation. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's interesting, but that's going to be down to, I don't know the particulars of this exact one, but that's going to be down to, like, we know that the environment can modify gene expression. Like, if you, I mean, that's true for almost anything. It'll cause, the environment causes you to over or under express certain genes, and sometimes that can be pretty dramatic. Plants are much more simple organisms, so they can change in ways that are far more incredible seeming to us than we can, because we're like complex, right? But like, you know, cut an earthworm in half, it'll still live because it's a simple organism. Can't do that with a human being.
Yeah, plants are good for those tests, which is interesting. And I mean, there's people that do a lot of tests on plants, man. They're just not in the academic structure that's the mainstream one, but their results are repeatable for some reason. And the genetic plasticity is what allowed that. That wasn't like it already contained that information to do that thing. And then all of the precursors of that there in that location would look like that other plant. But that's not because of the genetics, that's strictly because of an environmental change that activated something that was already within its genetic code.
Sure, let me bring up a point of agreement. I'm not a user, but I'm all for legalization.
Based. All right. The next one we got is, Chuck McNorris says, Is Pachycetus a dog?
A duck or a dog?
Dog.
No, it's not a dog. It's dog-like in its in some ways, but no, it's you can call it a whale if you want to.
Is that the land? That's the land whale, right?
Yeah, Pachycetus is the earliest known ancestor of whales. That is, well, I mean, again, because of monophyly, I could say that bacteria are the earliest ancestor of whales, but it's a direct ancestor of whales from within the order Carnivora or whatever order they're in.
All right. Next one we got here is from Kyle. Rollheiser says, can scientists explain the full evolution of humans through the scientific method?
Sorry, because that's not... Where's my Google Doc? It's hard to track the question when I can't read it. Can you say it again for me?
Yeah, no problem. So can scientists explain the full evolution of humans through the scientific method?
Oh, I mean, I don't think the scientific method can ever produce like a, I don't even know what you would call this, like a, an absolute truth or brute facts necessarily, or like a totality of anything. But I think it can absolutely explain every useful aspect, maybe of for human evolution, especially. I mean, we're one particular species. We know our common ancestor. So, I mean, there you go. And then from this point, it just literally turns into that episode of Futurama where it's like, okay, you have 20 missing links, but what about the 21st? Yeah, we have that one too. What about the 22nd? Well, we don't have that one yet. Aha! So the theory is so far unproven. I was like, okay.
Alrighty. And next we got Hugh. Hugh Cullen Scholes, one of my great mods, for Planet Peterson. So I'm simultaneously sharing DNA with a banana and a fish. So I'm a post-aquatic walking fruit capable of 50% producing human life.
Oh, that's hilarious. Beautiful. This is
that's poetic.
You guys, if you haven't seen the evolution episode of South Park, it's actually it's a two-part episode because it's where Cartman gets frozen and goes into the future. Mm. Mrs. Garrison, she was trans during that season, ends up hooking up with Richard Dawkins, and Mrs. Garrison has to teach the kids evolution, and she says, so congratulations, kids, you're the retarded offspring of a fish that had butt sex with a frog squirrel. And they start crying. It's so funny. But I don't know if the guy's like saying that as if this is so stupid that therefore evolution is false or whatever, but I'll just take it as funny.
All right. Next one we got, let me see here, Kyle Rollheiser, Planet Peterson, do fish have feelings?
I don't know what it means to have feelings. I mean, philosophically, you can't prove that any entity is not a pea zombie, even another human. That's just a known problem. It's been known for a very long time. Can fish feel things? That's actually, there's some really interesting research that's done on that. If anybody wants to read a cool book on this, Peter Godfrey Smith has written about animals and their conscious experience. It's been argued that fish don't feel things, like feel pain. People argue that about insects too. I'm not super familiar with the fish research. I don't know to what extent they clearly experience stress when they are exposed to harm. So they can obviously detect when their like body is being injured and stuff like that. But to what extent do they express concern over that or care? It's kind of an open question. Sunfish, like you talked about koalas are worthless animals. The sunfish is...
Yeah, sunfish is the worst.
It's just such a failure of an organism. It doesn't even know
if half its body is gone.
They're being...
It's so stupid.
You can see videos and pictures of them being eaten alive and they're just sitting there like...
Yeah, they're fine. And sometimes they go too close to the surface and then they suffocate.
Oh wow. Yeah, I hadn't heard that
before. They're completely tarted, man.
That must be the de-evolution you were talking about, Chris.
No, it's all evolution. It's all evolution. No.
We got Rev Russ says, Charles Darwin married his first cousin. Why should I trust him in matters of biology?
That's not an allegation.
Who did Adam and Eve's kids hook up with? Each other? Okay. Therefore, Christianity. Why should anybody believe Christianity or Judaism?
Chris, nothing?
Oh, dude, I that's a whole bag of puppies. I don't know if I want to carry, bro, right now.
That's fair enough.
I mean, I could, but I respect you guys' time.
And then I've seen this one didn't come in the Q&A, but I've just seen it repeated in the chat a few times. How do we determine where a clade begins?
It's going to be kind of subjective no matter how you do it, because the thing about classification is that like we have to create the categories and we're agents, so no matter how we do it, there's going to be some subjectivity to it. But what's not subjective is those degrees of relatedness within them. So, like, you could argue that we could have split the clades up in different ways. Sure, but the genetic part of phylogeny or phylogenetics or whatever would still objectively hold, and it would maintain across those groups still. So, this is kind of a funny thing. If we had lived hundreds of millions of years earlier, before like some sort of modern group like birds existed, then we wouldn't have had that group. And so then perhaps if we then existed for hundreds of millions of years, we would have therefore called birds. We wouldn't have called them birds. We would have called them feather dinosaurs or something. I don't know. Like we would have come up with a different name. We just, you know, we're working off of the stuff in the past and we categorized it in the way that we did. And it's like, well, whatever. Okay.
You have anything for that, Chris?
No.
No. All right.
No.
All righty. All right, let me see here. It's just only a minute was left over. That's not bad.